and welcome back to Inside the Business of Sports. I am Michael Carlisle, and I am joined, as always, by my mentor, Professor K, Cleveland's sports business professor. And we have got another fantastic guest joining us today. Ties to Cleveland, but is world-renowned, is all over the place, and we are very, very excited to have her. But I'm not going to do that formal introduction. I'm going to bring in Professor K right now to talk about his friend and our guest for the day.
Yes, Michael, thank you. And Eileen McManaman is coming to us on a visit today from Vancouver, but I'm proud to let our local listeners know that we grew up in the same neighborhood, Cam's Corner, and her cousin was my college roommate. So what a small world. And Eileen and I have known each other now for, at least a decade through the National Sports Forum. But let me give you a quick background and I'll turn it over to her. But she is a renowned sports marketer and sustainability consultant and the founder of 5T Sports. So this is a consulting firm that helps sports organizations and brands create sustainable sponsorships and marketing campaigns. So 20 years of experience in the industry. She's an expert in strategic planning, partnership development, and sustainability. And, you know, just to name drop some of the people that she has worked with, that would include, Michael, the International Olympic Committee. How about the United Nations? And I got to throw Major League Baseball because we're just getting the season underway.
I think I've heard of some of those people. So, yeah.
So, Eileen, hey, listen, welcome to our show.
Thanks so much for having me. This is exciting. Good to be back in the land. And I'm talking with some of my favorite people about some of my favorite subjects.
Eileen, before we start drilling down on sponsorship and sustainability, why don't you share with our audience how you got to where you are today from Cam's Corner, passionate about sports, but found a way to make a career at it and really starting your own company when it comes to sustainability, consulting, and sponsorships.
Yeah. So, you know, I became a sports fan as a kid when I was delivering the newspaper here in Cleveland and reading it as I went, reading the sports pages. I really started to get very excited about our then Indians, now Guardians. And even from a young age, I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to work for this team. I want to go run the baseball team someday. But my dad kind of didn't feel that was a right career path. And so he kind of said, nah, I think you should go get a business degree or something of that nature. So I went off to Kent State, got a degree in economics and then decided to follow that up with a master's in international business. And that degree took me overseas to Germany. Where I worked for the Italian auto manufacturer Fiat and Alfa Romeo and stepped into their marketing department, running the brand, the strategy, the advertising, but most importantly, the sports sponsorship. And so a lot of that started with motorsports and with cycling, which is a huge sport in Europe, Tour de France and big cycling events like that.
So fast forward to the startup of 5T Sports. I mean, I probably didn't do you justice with the intro. Why don't you share with our audience like what 5T Sports is all about and the type of work that you do?
Yeah. Well, I'll share the inside story that not many know. The 5T actually stands for 5-tool. And if you're a baseball fan, you know what a 5-tool player is. So we'll let your fans Google that on their own. But, you know, I chose that name because I said, we're going to be able to bring you all the skills you need to be better at what you're doing. But I started 5T because after leaving Germany, I was over there 5 years. I went to work in technology for a number of years, but I had that gnawing urge to get back to sports. And as it turned out, our local baseball team where I had moved to in Vancouver was being sold. And so I wormed my way in with the new owners to get them to hire me to run the minor league baseball team there. And your owners will love, or your listeners will love that. I felt like I had no experience running I had no experience running a sports franchise, but they took a chance and I had a cup of coffee running a minor league team.
Good for you. Good. And you know, you said a couple of things there with 5T. I saw Michael buying into it because he's got Little League practice after the show today.
So, good for you.
I do. I'm hoping I find some five tool players out there. It's going to be tough when they're 11 and 12 years old, but we're going to try to get them to that point.
There you go. Perfect.
So a little bit more about 5T and the work you're doing.
Yeah. So once I left the baseball team, I was like, you know, what does this industry really need right now? I think I was coming into the industry and going, what can I offer? So I kind of took that inventory of my skills and looked at the industry, which at that time in 2008, when I founded the company, heading into recession, really wasteful. So I said, well, you know, if you need to tighten your belt, you got to save. And there's a lot of technologies you could be deploying to be more efficient, especially around energy, water, waste, the building management. And I'm like, if you can save that money, you can put it into other things like player signing bonuses. So we focused in on the three things we felt sports was falling down on. Efficiency, technology, and community. Because that was also the time where, just prior to the recession, people were really building up all the luxury suite areas. And I'm like, but what about the young fans? What about the young families? What about the fans that really can't afford that kind of seating? And we knew enough about how that functions, of course, for minor league baseball, but also, enough about technology from my years in technology to say, I think we can bring them these solutions that can help them, what I say, future-proof the industry to weather the challenges that we're facing, whether it's income challenges, health and wellness challenges, but also, climate challenges.
Yeah. And when you're talking to an owner of a professional sports organization or a team that has control of their arena or stadium, you're not just talking about saving a couple of dollars. You're talking about saving a lot of money.
Hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars and in perpetuity, right? So you're paying, if I would walk in the early days and say, look, you know, let's say right now your electric bill around here is, $20,000 a day. What if I could tell you that if you invested $60,000, you could get it down to $2,000 a day? Now we're in a conversation about
right.
So, I mean, it comes down to some of those things of going, look, just like anything that we do, we have to invest a little bit. But I would really work through the math and show them these are the reliable things to do. These are the low-cost things to do. These are the more expensive things to do. But we are talking about hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars saved.
Cool. All right, well, let's jump in on my first sponsorship-related question, because we talk a lot about sponsorships on this show. But why is the relationship between sports sponsorships and sustainability, why is this an important topic that we're even discussing today?
Well, I'm sure a number of your folks listening in have heard the term ESG. It's all over the news, right? And it's also become political. ESG stands for environmental and social governance. And a few years ago, the stock exchanges have required that companies and brands report on what they're doing around climate issues and what they're doing around people issues like diversity, equity, and inclusion, or customer care or employee taking care of their employees. And that became, of course, the big issue for all of us during COVID. Other issues arose in 2020 around Black Lives Matter. So suddenly corporations were being looked at both by the public around what are you doing to help, but they were also being required by the SEC and other stock exchanges and investment companies to be addressing these issues. So there's regulatory pressure on companies and brands to report these things and do these things. And there's also consumer pressure on them. So when those brands care about something and need to do something, that feeds down into their supply chain. And that feeds down into the relationships that they have in their ecosystem. And what are we, as the sports industry, we're suppliers of media, of marketing, and we're part of their relationships. So that means that whatever the brands need, we're going to answer to, right?
All right. Great segue to my next question. And we were talking about it over lunch today, but for our listeners, I'm looking for a good example where sustainability meets sponsorship. And you were talking to me about one of my favorite events, the Waste Management Open out in Phoenix. So if you're a golf fan, that is like something that everyone should strive to get to. But you know the behind the scenes stories of that, and I know you're close to the folks at Waste Management. So walk our listeners through a little bit more of that example. It's more than just putting their name on a PGA event, right?
It is. It's about Waste Management did initially just put their name on a PGA event, but then they realized, hey, wait a minute, we can use this to actually demonstrate how we are managing waste and also how we need to manage it going into the future. So they had turned that event, and they're signed through at least 2025 now, in that, taking total ownership of that. They use it to demonstrate how they can put on an event like that. And if you follow the numbers, that is 825,000 people over 5 days at that course. 825,000.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And on the Saturday, the largest day, 225,000 people. So that's a lot of garbage, as you can imagine. But what they do is that event is what we would call net zero. That means that whatever damage they inflict in waste, they take out. I can explain that better in a moment. We'll talk about the waste. But on the energy side, the energy that they use from renewable sources, and they also buy what we call offsets to help build more renewable energy infrastructure. With water, their net zero water, all the water that they use that is required, they actually pay to restore water to the Colorado River through natural projects that help restore the river course and help preserve what's there. On the waste, they manage everything that comes in there so that everything coming in is either recyclable, like an aluminum can or paper. It's compostable, which means it will break down and become soil again. So the food waste, even cups and plates and knives and forks, can be made of compostable materials. So that's one way that there's zero waste, because it's being restored. But there's tricky items like disposable diapers and cigarette butt filter, you know, the filters on the end of a cigarette. Those are incinerated to energy. So they're burned, but in a controlled environment where that then the energy from that is captured and brought back into the system. So it's a very amazing event. Worldwide, there's nothing like it. Net zero energy, net zero water, net zero waste.
Yeah, and Michael in my class learned that, you know, there's different types of companies that get involved with sponsorship. In this case, Waste Management is a business-to-business company. They're not going to knock on my door, come by and say, hey, you know. So can you share with our listeners how they might use some of the hospitality and everything that is going on throughout the week of the tournament to, you know, showcase their brand and drive more sales?
Yeah. Well, on the B2B side, they host a sustainability forum where they invite CEOs and chief sustainability officers, and of course, CFOs and others, you know, those high-end folks from very large corporations like Marriott or McDonald's or Disney resorts and things, and really bring a lot of thought leadership around what the future can look like. We can have everything that we can have. We can have a fantastic golf tournament that everybody enjoys and that is an absolute riot to attend without doing damage. So they really take that occasion to bring those executives in and talk to them about how they're doing what they're doing, and also inspire them with some futuristic ideas. But they also inspire the average on the ground fan. They have a green out day, and they educate them through gamified things on the course about, you know, the stuff they're using, so that they can take those stories back to wherever. Maybe they have a small business.
Right. So that's a good example of a brand using a sponsorship of an event. Let's talk about a team that has really built it into their strategy. So I don't want to single out the Browns or the Cavs or the Guardians. They're our hometown teams. We love them, and they're doing good things there. But you and I were at a conference out in LA, and I've got a couple of former students that are working with this NWSL team in LA that they're kind of taking a lead on this stuff. So share that story if you would, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Yeah, for those who haven't maybe followed the story of the NWSL, that's the National Women's Soccer League, Angel City FC, fairly famous because it's owned by a number of famous people. But from the get-go, that franchise was was brought into being because it came to Natalie Portman's attention that the women weren't paid as well as the men. And she thought that was ridiculous. So she gathered up a few friends and said, we're going to start a team where the women are paid equally. And we're also going to make sure that we're engaged fully in the community. We're going to make sure this is a sport where we're truly not just an extra or somebody that gives things to the community, but that we have them right in it with us. So every sponsorship that they sell, 10% of that money goes back into the LA community. That's an upfront conversation. So they'll talk with the brands who are sponsoring them to say, you know, what is it that you care about in particular? Is it a people issue, like gender pay equity or diversity, equity, and inclusion? Is it an education issue? You know, you'd like to see kids having more opportunity. Is it a climate issue? And they work with their partners and build joint projects with them from the ground up. So that's an automatic in their model.
Right. Now, with your company, 5T Sports, you have created a proprietary scorecard that in your consulting role has really paying dividends for you. So walk our audience through this scorecard and how you try to measure all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very difficult to read a sustainability report from a corporation, even if you're a sustainability expert. There's a lot in there. It's not always clear. They're long. They're not always interesting. So we've created a way that we can do that for partnerships people and say, look, this is what's important to this company. This is how they're performing. So if you can think of it as a bit of a report card on a brand, and we've assessed almost 70 brands that are the big major partners across sports and graded them, you know, let's call it there's a numerical grade, but let's call it, here's the A students, here's the B students. So if you're a company or if you're a sports property like Angel City and you're saying, look, we care about who we have a relationship here. It matters what their social responsibility is. They want to choose from that A-list student, right? They're not interested in talking to any of the C or D students. So we've created a way to bring that into the room where they have that scoring information in hand. And they also know which issues that company is really being active about so they can advance their pitch much faster and say, oh, we see you care about this. So let's talk about how we might work together on that.
Right. And then some of the advice that you can give to the teams that are out selling sponsorships on how to build sustainability into the activation and the strategy. I mean, that's fascinating.
Yeah. By identifying those topics that are most most relevant for certain companies. I'm trying to think of a good example. Do you have a favorite brand, Jim?
Oh, I'll throw that to Michael and then I can buy a little more time. Michael, if you think of one of your favorite brands, what comes to mind?
Nike.
Okay. So, you know, they've had that. Obviously, we hear good and bad things about Nike all the time. But you know, largely, they're working a great deal on what we call circularity. So taking products back in, breaking it down, and making that into a new shoe. You know, making it into a basketball court in some cases. You know, taking the rubber from the sole. So those, you know, let's say Climate Pledge Arena, where you care a lot about climate, you might say, well, that's a brand I'm going to prefer to work with. Now, it's not a differentiator in a big way because Adidas is also very, very strong in that space. But it's helpful to know that as you walk in the door to say, well, I could just talk to them about marketing analytics or selling them more opportunities, digital outreach to fans. Or I could talk to them about something that's at the heart of what they're doing right now and how they're addressing the future and how they can leverage our platform to tell that story.
Right, right. All right, so I've been hogging all the questions. I know Michael's got a question on consumers, so Michael, roll with it.
Well, I loved hearing Eileen talk about the Waste Management Open. That is probably the most fun golf tournament of the year. Like, I want to be one of those guys at the stadium hole 17 and, you know, having beers with my buddies and slinging beers out onto the green. But that doesn't necessarily have the best model for sustainability. So what can consumers do to play in driving sustainability with sports sponsorships? And how can we encourage more companies to prioritize their, you know, sustainability in their sponsorships?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the companies are definitely listening. And one of the primary ways you can do that is if you have a favorite brand and there's a certain property that they're affiliated with, let's say it's something like a big event like that, like an all-star game. That's the time to get on social and say, wow, it's great that you're doing, you know, it's great to see you here. How are you guys addressing this? Or, you know, I really care about that. Or if they have a product that's out there, like Adidas's Parley for the Oceans shoes, which are made from recycled fishing nets that have been pulled out of the ocean. That's a time to get on social and say, I really like this product. I hope we'll see more of it. So certainly you can use your voice that way.
Cleveland State University's new Sports and Entertainment Management program, where students can turn their passion for sports and entertainment into a rewarding career, gain hands-on experience, and learn from industry experts in the rapidly growing field. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
All right, that's great. And I love the fact that companies would be willing to listen, you know, to just, you know, hey, I like this idea. We should run with this more. Hopefully, all businesses can kind of get onto that model.
Yeah. But you can do that with your favorite sports team too, right? Like, you know, a lot of places are starting to get rid of plastic straws, but you can just communicate that all over the place and go, we don't really need, it's good that they're there for the people that really need them, but, you know, don't take it, don't use it, tell them you don't want it. Refuse is the first of the R's. We call it refuse, reduce, recycle. and, you know, so just consuming less is actually, you know, when you don't need it, you don't need it.
All right. So what are some of the challenges that you see or obstacles to implementing these practices with sports sponsorships, and how can they be overcome? Because like we were talking earlier, certain companies are going to lead, certain companies are going to be quick to follow, and then others are just, I don't know if they ever get it, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the ways that we're getting that word out there is we've been doing some research and we're continuing to do it on where we see the valuations of deals going.
Okay.
So we have shown that generally values-based partnerships like those that Angel City is doing, like the Climate Pledge Arena is doing, and a number of other organizations are doing, are generally worth 3 to 4 times what the average sports deal is worth. And there's a couple of things in there. One, and in addition, they're lasting longer. We're still doing the research to see if that bears out statistically, but that's what we're seeing anecdotally. Because those companies have a long-term goal, and they're willing to work with that partner for a longer time to get to that long-term goal. But it's also a goal that's grounded, and they want to, it's not going to be a flavor of the month. They're not going to want one activation this year and a different activation next year. So it builds in a lot of efficiencies.
Yeah, and you just brought up a great example not too far from you down in Seattle with the Climate Pledge Arena. Now, Amazon could have just plopped their name on that building and called it a day, but they saw an opportunity and they paid a premium for that opportunity. That was like record level for a NHL naming rights deal. Why don't you walk our audience through a little bit about Climate Pledge Arena, how it came to be, and what some of the things they're doing out there.
Yeah. So talking about reuse, if people are familiar, Climate Pledge Arena, that as it exists now, was previously Key Arena in Seattle, and it was quite old and dated. And a lot of people were kind of thinking, you know, this can't be revived or resuscitated. But it is incredibly damaging to pull down a whole building, as you can imagine, quite wasteful. So they worked very, very hard to resuscitate what they could, keep that footprint. And that was in motion through Oakview Group before the naming rights came through.
Right.
But they were very clear, you know, obviously Amazon's a big target for anybody with a naming rights deal in the Seattle area. But Amazon has also made a very large commitment to addressing climate issues. And they've come, so Jeff Bezos himself came up with the Climate Pledge. A lot of people are familiar with like the Warren Buffett and Bill Gates billionaires kind of pledge where they're giving away all their money. Climate Pledge is similar. It's Bezos challenging other CEOs to drive their companies toward solving climate issues. So rather than just put Amazon in the building and use it to talk about that, he said, we're going to put this front and center and make that the topic of conversation, which means that every time the WNBA player, the Storm, or the Seattle Kraken play, that phrase, climate pledge, gets repeated over and over and over again by all the broadcasters, right? It's on your ticket. It's on, you know. So they're really trying to raise awareness, but they've also done it by walking the walk. The building itself is incredibly efficient. There's a number of things in there that showcase newer technologies that help us use less energy, less water. And as you can imagine, an ice rink itself uses a lot of energy and a lot of water. You have to keep that ice cold, right? That takes power.
So in one of our earlier podcasts we did on facility management, we talked about this whole certification these days for arenas, stadiums to get LEED certified, right? So why don't you educate? I mean, like our typical sports fan is not going to be taking these classes at Cleveland State. And that could be new terminology to some. So walk us through this whole concept of LEED certification.
Yeah. So LEED is a building certification, and there's a couple of different flavors of it. You can get LEED certified, and it is an acronym. It's from the U.S. Green Building Council, for the efficiency of a building, but also factors around the building, such as the landscaping and how well the building, how healthy the building is for people in it, right? Do the windows open, you know, things like that, so that people get some fresh air. So this LEED building standard can be done for a new building. It can be done for a renovated building, such as Climate Pledge. There's also a LEED certification for how you operate the building. Just like you, if you built a house, you could build it to the highest efficiency standards today. But if 10 or 15 years from now, you haven't maintained the building, or you're leaving the windows and doors open, it doesn't matter how efficient the place is if you're operating it irresponsibly. So sports teams are very keen to have the building operate efficiently for cost considerations. But they also find that, again, brands or sponsors or even the municipality is treating them more favorably when they say that this is a responsible citizen in our community as a building, right? So there's a lot of uplift that comes from that.
Well, one example you gave me, I think Mike will get a kick out of this one, but let's go back to the roof at Mercedes-Benz Stadium today compared to what it used to be like. And that's just a great story. So you were sharing that for lunch.
Yeah. So one, Arthur Blank, who owns the Atlanta Falcons and the Atlanta FC, phenomenal gentleman, you know, exceptional business philanthropist. And he's behind the building of that new Mercedes Stadium. I guess about 6 or 7 years old now. And he said, yeah, we're going to build this to the highest standards. So in their process of going for LEED certification, they had to look at things like drainage. Again, as I mentioned, the area around the building. What they discovered, the old Atlanta Falcons stadium there had their parking lot draining off in such a way that in a heavy rain, that water ran down into the neighborhood below the stadium, which was a lower priced, lower income neighborhood, causing that neighborhood all kinds of grief that they could not well afford, like water damage to their homes, mud sliding down the side and into their sidewalks and streets, garbage being carried down there. So when they were redesigning it, they were like, okay, we can't just do what we had been doing. We need to fix that. We can't be a bad neighbor in that way. So they did that. And part of that is that LEED certification process of how are you conserving water? How are you retaining water? So they built in several large containers where they capture rainwater and then they reuse that rainwater to irrigate the fields. That means that that facility also doesn't put extra stress on the city's drinking water. So there's more fresh drinking water for people to bathe as well, wash their dishes, that's not being pulled off by a sport facility en masse. So that's a very responsible way to approach both, not just your own site, but the way that your site and your building affects the people around you, and not just necessarily people right below you, but also the entire city. One of the other things that they've done is make sure that they're recycling all their aluminum. When they have a partner for that helps them get that process done, takes the money from that, provides that money to Habitat for Humanity, who builds houses with Mercedes-Benz Stadium employees in that very neighborhood that they used to be such a bad neighbor to. So it's really a wonderful story about thoughtfully thinking about how you interact with the community and how you can be a benefit. And that's really what sustainability is. It's about a little bit less me, 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 and how do I sell my tickets, but how do I truly be a bigger benefactor to the community at large? Not with a few ticket giveaways, but being a real neighbor and a real help.
Michael, I know you had at least one other question. I've been stealing the mic so far. I apologize.
It's no problem. This is your show. I'm happy to be here. But I did have one. So we've done, you know, quite a bit of talking about how these, you know, sports, you know, franchises can go about being better. But what can, you know, these sports sponsorships do to raise awareness about environmental issues to inspire us, the fans and the athletes, to be better with what we're doing?
Yeah, that is a great question. And there are some good examples. But there's still relatively few. And that's one of the areas that we like to focus on is what we call fan mobilization. There's fan engagement. Yeah, you and I can talk, or I can send you a little thing back and forth on social. But when you get people to actually take a behavior change, so what you want to show them, what sports can show them, you know, let's put it this way. A lot of people will say, well, what does it matter if I recycle or don't recycle? I'm just one person and it's a huge problem and my little bit doesn't make a difference. What sports provides us is a stepping stone. I can see a stadium's worth of change if we all do it. So we encourage things where you're showing the cumulative impact of 50,000 people doing something. College game day across the country is a very good one. There's a whole bunch of sponsors that get involved there. It's revolved over the years, but where they have a competition, there's a big competition around the recycling, because as you know, a tailgate is quite a big mess and can be quite nasty. But now they've gamified that to where there's one school out of a conference is going to win that. It's like a game day zero waste challenge. I'll find the link and you can share it with your listeners. But when you gamify that stuff, look at sports. We're all competitive. So that's the biggest thing that anybody can do is turn it into a game, not a lecture. That's false. That's nobody wants to go to a game and have somebody go, please remember to recycle right. But if you say, hey, we're trying to beat the other guys, we're gonna do better than them. Oh, everybody's all in. They don't care.
Hey, Michael,
if we could
gamify and beat the Steelers at anything, we'll do it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, let's get on that.
100%. There's not a doubt in my mind that Cleveland will absolutely go ham if it comes to we got to beat the Steelers in this. And I love the way you said that, because a lot of people have that kind of mindset. You know, I'm just one person. But if everybody has that mindset, that one person, it becomes, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people with that same mindset. So being able to have that, you know, behavioral change is really, really important. I'm glad that we were able to hit on that.
Yeah, well, we're working on something with some folks who do augmented reality, where we show an augmented reality thing on the field of this is how much waste that generally you guys generate either on the field or on the court, and show them that, and then gamify it to people can take an action, or you know, as every time they throw something in the bin, they get to pop a bubble until they bring that thing down together. So either getting a collective action or getting this gamification where you're rewarding people for doing things. The Blackhawks did a great job of it a few years ago. I'm just thinking of that. But I'll hold there and we can come back to that if you like.
So Eileen, Michael talked about raising awareness, but the industry isn't just sitting on its backs and not doing anything. You've gotten very involved, and I know you've got a new leadership role with something called the Green Sports Alliance. So share a little bit of insights on what the Green Sports Alliance is all about and some of the work you're doing there.
Yeah, well, thanks. So the Green Sports Alliance was started about 14 years ago or so, and it did start in the Pacific Northwest, so Washington State, Oregon, and a little bit in where I live now in Vancouver. And it's a trade association of many of our professional leagues and teams, as well as event organizers like the PGA or the WTA, a circuit-based thing, motorsports, who are all getting together and sharing best practices, exploring new technologies together and exchanging that knowledge. So the Green Sports Alliance is that place where they all meet to talk about these things, because there are always new technologies coming out, especially in things like energy management. You know, we're all seeing people are having an energy storage, home energy storage walls now from Tesla. So that's the organization. It was started actually by Paul Allen, Bill Gates' co-founder at Microsoft. He owned the Seahawks and the Sounders and the Portland Trailblazers, who, along with the Seattle Storm, the Seattle Mariners, and the Vancouver Canucks, were the founding members. But one of the very, very earliest members as well were the Cleveland Guardians and the St. Louis Cardinals. And actually, the previous baseball commissioner, Bud Selig, was a huge advocate of greening. And the NHL followed suit quickly after. So the leagues are taking a very big leadership role in this.
Yeah, and then if you don't mind sharing with our audience your new role, because it's just expanded.
Yeah, so I have recently become the board chair of Green Sports Alliance, and that is a huge honor for me and a big baton to take the hand off, because the previous leader for the last 13 years, board chair, was Scott Jenkins. And Scott Jenkins was the guy who oversaw the Mercedes-Benz Stadium build. He also, previous to that, was at Safeco and now T-Mobile with the Mariners. So in that role was one of the founding members. But goes back to the Philadelphia Eagles, who were also one of the early luminaries of this this area, with through their owners, who said, what can we do? And the Philadelphia Eagles, that's a great story. They're one of very few net positive contributors to the energy grid. They were producing more energy through solar panels on their stadium, and they had some wind turbines than they used. How great is that?
So on the net positive too, pretty good sponsorship category if you work the deal right, correct?
It is. And that's one of the things that I've been talking about for years is the money. So there's cost savings. That isn't always as attractive to folks. But when you show them how they can make money at this, I will tell you, so the Climate Pledge deal, that arena naming rights deal is one of the richest in sports that I'm aware of, $800 million over 20 years. The only one that comes close is Toronto with the Maple Leafs. And Raptors are in that building. That's also an $800 million deal. Sloan spends seven figures a year on the Cubs. They have naming rights on their training facility. So it's a water company. There's another water company. Pentair is an industrial water company. They spend about that with the Twins, and they have done for years. They're showcasing their technologies to both CEOs in a B2B and a B2C side with Sloan, because they make consumer fixtures. Renewable energy, another category that, you know, you have new entrants. You have our own utility companies who, if anybody's noticed, are spending a lot more than they ever did before on sports, because they have a message to share. So these are whole new sponsorship categories that are opening up. And as I mentioned before, the dollar figures are 4X.
Yeah.
They're huge. Yeah, they're really big.
To think of a new arena or stadium or a renovated one to be an energy plant. I remember reading something about Philadelphia where they were teaming up to put solar panels on the top of the stadium that would generate not only enough energy for the stadium, but some extra energy for the neighborhood, right?
That wasn't Philadelphia. That's in Amsterdam.
Okay.
Where the facility there is called the Johan Cruyff Arena. The resident team is Ajax Amsterdam, the soccer team. They're a Champions League team, if people follow that, follow European soccer. And they have actually built in a full room of used car, EV car batteries that are still functional, but not functional enough to be put in a car anymore because they can't accelerate enough. So that energy room acts as a storage generator, a backup generator for the neighborhood around it. It can also power the stadium itself so that, again, that stadium is a bit more self-contained. And as we see more extreme weather events, as we've seen happen when a certain team went to the Super Bowl in Dallas and there was a huge blizzard and a power out, and then we had a power outage in New Orleans, buildings need to be resilient on their own. And they're getting into that space. Right. The other thing we should touch on is food and transportation, but I'll leave it to you guys to when you want to do that.
All right. And then on our site, Michael, I think we could provide a link on Eileen's company, 5T Sports. But before I let you go, the thing that's going to set you apart is really this intricate scorecard that you've built out. So we'll let the folks that are interested enough come to our site and we'll provide a link. But talk to us a little bit about the scorecard that you're developing, have developed, and now, you know, the NBA is calling and all these other people, like they want more, right? So give us a little bit on that before we call it a wrap.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've just given you all these large number deals, right? But those deals are complicated to work through. So what the scorecard is doing for folks is helping them work through the research of that faster and figure out who those really interesting prospects are among the brands that are out there and active in sports, and guiding them to the topics that are going to resonate when they go to do a pitch. So that's our take on it. Could you do this research yourself? A certain NWSL team that we mentioned earlier is doing that. Others are doing that, but it takes them a long time. And they have to both, you know, do that. They have to do that research so they can go out what they're actually paid to do, which is sell and close the deal. So we help them get faster to that point of, look, we've got the research for you. We've got the cheat sheet. We've got the cliff notes to send you into that prospect to go after and to also identify who those companies are that are going to pay 3 and 4x because they have a certain message to tell. So that's it. We can get you there faster and smarter so well, you can do what you do.
We hope we can build a pipeline with you to Cleveland State and get some of our students maybe helping you with some of that research or anything we can do. But just a real pleasure to have you on the podcast today. And listen, this is a hyper-local podcast. So, Michael, we want our fans and our listeners to realize that there's a lot of sports roads that lead back to Cleveland. And Eileen is a classic example of that.
There are a ton of sports roads that lead back to Cleveland. And Eileen, I just want to say thank you very much. This is when, you know, Jim told me that we were going to have you on. This is not a topic that I necessarily had much knowledge of at all. And being able to talk with you and being able to get this out there, I'm very, very grateful. You have made me drastically smarter on this topic today. So thank you.
Well, Michael, you'd be proud to know that Eileen has motivated me so that the intro class that you took during the fall next year is going to have a module on sustainability. Because I don't think Fantastic. That you have to wait to get to grad school to learn more about it. I think it's something that coming in the door, our students will begin to appreciate.
Yeah. And it touches on every job in the building, right? The people out selling partnerships, the people running the facility, the people who are working, the coaches and the trainers looking to, ensure a really healthy atmosphere in the building for the athletes. It's in all aspects of it. So no matter what role you take on in sports, this can be part of your job. You don't have to have the title. It's a group effort.
Well, thanks again.
All right. My pleasure.
Well, for Professor K and Eileen McMenamin, I just want to say thank you guys for tuning in. This is Inside the Business of Sports. We will be back next week. And remember, Vikings row together.